Hi, y'all. Katie again. Hey, quick question. How many of you guys are not going to be here in the morning tomorrow? Okay, that's all right. Don't feel ashamed. I get it. There's a life going on out there. Okay, because it's going to make me decide if I was going to go into something else, if it was going to be a large majority. And if you're lying and you're not here tomorrow, I'll know who you are, okay? Okay, first of all, I got to tell you, you know, I think I have expressed this. I love me some Mike Lorenz with all my heart. Honor and a privilege to be here with him. But I've had, every time he comes into Austin for whatever reason, if it's for, you know, man-to-man or he's speaking it in our town, I always have all my sponsees and Charlie's sponsees, and we have a big thing at the house, and Mike just kind of does Mike. And so one of the sponsees wrote this list of Mike Lorenz quotes. I thought you'd like this. Self-reliance will always produce fear and pain. These are good things to ponder in your on awakening. Old ideas, my fear is going to protect me. I'm an approval sucker rather than a people pleaser. That's the one I stole. Who am I to judge the kindness of others and reject it? When people try to help you, your pride will stand in the way. No. You know, don't help me. And then you rob them of what they want. My ego will do anything to keep a seat at the table. An old idea is just a limited belief. If I wanted to outgrow fear, I'm going to have to change. We could sit on that one for a little while. Fear. I don't know how to change. pleasure versus happiness. He does an incredible deal on that. Pleasure is relief, and it's brief. Yeah, typically hanky-panky and food. I added that. Happiness is sustainable. Resentment is just fear and drag. That's one of my favorites that I still always use. Write down, okay, no, that might be, you know, inappropriate. I don't care. Write down each morning the 5 things that I'm not willing to do to have a relationship with God. I know, it kind of makes you think, doesn't it? And I love it when my buddy printed that up, one of Charlie's sponsees. I'm going to just briefly do some of the amends that were in my world. You know, as I told you, my dad and I had that horrific falling out, and then we just always bucked heads. And then, you know, I have a 5-year-old, I'm a single mom, I'm not living up to anybody's expectations because I was an absolute pain in the ass. Let's call it what it is. If you be alcoholic, you are not a cakewalk in the family. I mean, I'm sorry, no matter how bad it was, we cause so much harm and pain that we are a lot of problems. And my dad and I just were toe-to-toe all the time. And I woke up out of untreated alcoholism, and my father unfortunately died at 72 in the hospital of a surgery gone poorly, and I'd lost my mom when I was 8. She was 33 to a kidney disease. So, you know, I've got both parents are gone. It wasn't like the end of the world, don't get me wrong, but it was, when I came out of untreated alcoholism, I realized I had not done what I was supposed to do, and I did everything. He wasn't buried. It was ashes. I did all that I could do, and I could not get over this grief of having screwed up and been sober that long and done a terrible job at the amends process. So in my prayer time, in the morning, God told me in the still quiet voice to go to my stepmom. Now my stepmom and I, she was a really tough woman, and I just didn't want to. You know, she'd been in my life basically for 5 years under the same roof, and then I left home. So she was just hard. And, you know, because she was trying to keep her foot on my throat. And God said, you know, go make the amends to her because your father loved her. And that's where it needs to begin. And I'm like, no, not doing it. And I remember saying no, and it was almost, you know, the still quiet voice comes and then it just goes. Really, I mean, it's so easy to overlook because it's still and it's quiet. And the next day it did the same thing, and I heard it really that time because it was the second time. And I said, I really don't want to do that, but I'll do it. And so I reached out to find her because I'd pretty much written them off. Her and her son and her daughter, even though we all grew up together, we called each other, you know, siblings, step siblings. And so I get ready to go to San Antonio. I call her and I say, can I come see you? And she's like, absolutely. And she's in her 80s. And Charlie says, he goes, you know, honey, the Cowboys are having training camp in San Antonio. I'm like, oh, well, I'll be sure and swing by there on this heavy-duty amends that I have to make. You know, you kind of want to go, okay, bring it back to I'm going to be talking to my stepmother, who I haven't talked to in 12 years. But let's talk about the Cowboys, okay? And I love me some football, but that was not the best thing for him to say. And that's going to feed back into this story in a little while. So, because, welcome to marriage. So I talk to my sponsor. We get every, you know, all my marching orders and everything in order. And I go down there, and I've never really thought, you know, crying and all that is the way to go about an amends. But when I got to the door, I'd brought lunch with me, and I knocked on the door. And when she opened it, she was so old. It just took my breath away. And I was just like, oh, my God, she was a model. My dad was quite the player. And he landed some hot chicks. You know, he married three times in a 18-month period after my mom died. And they were all extremely attractive women. And Charlie used to say, he could close a deal. He couldn't keep it closed, but he could close a deal. So she was so old, and I thought, oh, my gosh. And, you know, she goes, come in, and I sit down with her, and, I mean, I fall apart. I cannot stop crying. I am just, it's overwhelming. It still overwhelms me today. And I'm sitting there, and I'm trying to tell her what a shithead I was as a kid and how hard that was and what it must have been like for my dad and I to have a fight and him say, if you can't live under the rules of this house, you can't live here. And I left, and I made them pay that price. Now, just think about your kid leaving at 15, and a little girl at that. It's a walking womb out there. You know what I mean? And how much they worried. But it never crossed my mind as a 15-year-old. I saw it as a free ticket out, man. I could go do anything I want. I could get into bars at that age, the whole nine yards. So I just went on and on and on, and that's when I said to her, I said, I'm sure Dad told you when I was up in Wisconsin, and, you know, that's when she said, no, he never did. And then after I got through all that I knew of, I stopped, and she looked at me, and she was tough. She goes, now stop it. Stop doing this to yourself. Your father loved you, and you keep thinking he didn't. Stop it. So did I do the amends incorrectly? Probably. Especially after you hear the king of the amends letters, right? Elegant. Me, I'm like, ah! But the truth of the matter is my stepmom brought me back into her life. Then I made the amends to her daughter and her son that was my stepbrother and stepsister. That was remarkable. They invited me to weddings. I mean, it was really awesome. They made me the power of attorney over my mom when Tony was out of town in case she had health issues. I go down there and visit her. I mean, it was just really incredible, guys, what happens. Now, don't let me leave this part out. On the way home, I cannot wait to tell Charlie this emotional story. And he goes, did you get to go by and see the Cowboys? Didn't you? Yes, you did. As he looks down in shame, yes, I did. And I swear to God, I went, I'm going to go ahead and call my sponsor. So I called Marty and told her all about it because sometimes, you know, you got to do what you got to do. But that was so awesome. And then I told you about the bus amends that I made. Here's another one. I made a ton of amends for the people I harmed in business. I was a very shrewd businesswoman. But the way I say shrewd, when I say I was the Ray Donovan of the world, it's because, let's just, once again, not a hard stretch here. Is there anybody at work you don't like? Yeah, I got four people, you know. I mean, that's just the nature of work, right? And so what I would do is I would figure out a way to snub the person nobody liked out, and then everybody patted me on the back. So you see, I thought this was a good thing. And so I'd figure out, no concern about you at all, where your life was or anything. You are a problem, you're a pain in the neck, and you're ruining our good feeling here at work. So let me just push on out of this job. It was really terrible. And I got so much support for it, I thought it was great. And so this one woman at my company, I was a franchisee, and it was all the fitness business, which is so much fun. And this woman was a New York fashion designer. And we had a clothesline in the whole nine yards. And they asked me to be in the catalog, and then all of a sudden I'm in the catalog, and then I'm not in the catalog. And I'm like, what happened? And I can't even talk to her, you know, and she is tough. New York design woman was not giving me the time of day. And I thought, okay, I will pull your world down around your ankles, man. And I went to the president of the company that day, and I mean, I just smeared her name. And she was a hardworking woman. And years went by before I even realized what I had done, right? Because all this is bubbling to the surface. You start to wake up in Alcoholics Anonymous and shit bubbles up. And when I realized I was asked back to my company to speak to the all the instructors about something, I'd already retired. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to see this woman there at this event. We were at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas. There's 3,500 of us. And I'm trying to get this woman's attention. And I mean, every time she'd see me, she'd take off. It's like, oh, I've got no interest in talking to you. Have you ever had that feeling? It's miserable. You're like, oh, she hates me. And I'm trying, and with good reason, and I'm trying to, you know, and good God, Caesar's Palace. I mean, it's like walk a football field this way, then walk another football field this way. And I called Charlie. I said, I'm not going to be able to talk to her. You know, I don't really want to say her name because I don't want it on tape, but I said, I'm not going to be able to talk to her. And I gave it my best shot. I can't do it. And all of a sudden, you know, the size of the bathrooms in Caesar's Palace. I mean, they're as big as a football field, right? There's 110 stalls in the bathroom. And I walk in there, and it's her and I by ourselves. Once again, another lifeboat that God sends. And I saw her, and she goes, and I thought, oh, and I said, oh, my God, can I please talk to you? She goes, oh, no, Katie, it's really not necessary. You don't, you know, da 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 da. And I said, oh, my gosh, and I held my hands on her arms. I said, please give me a moment to tell you how sorry I am for the way I treated you many years ago. And I went into this amends, and she burst into tears. And she was like, oh, my God, I couldn't figure out why you would do that. You know, and I did this amends very well. And for the rest of that weekend, yeah, because, you know, we want to really get a pat on our back when we successfully do an amends, because it's hard. Amends are hard. Man, you are wrapped tight and, you know, yada, 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 and all that. When it's face-to-face amends, they're difficult. And then the rest of the weekend, she was like stuck to me like glue. Come sit over here, you know, come over here. And it was so awesome. And then she had a brain aneurysm, and she doesn't know a lot now. And, you know, and I sent flowers. And, I mean, there's a lot of follow-up you get to do when you rebuild those relationships. And I just think that's the amends process. Don't miss it. Don't miss it. Because everything in the world will tell you not to do it. This is a letter from one of my sponsees. She, have you ever had somebody say they're getting ready to have surgery or whatever, and you go, hey, if you need anything, call me. And you don't mean it. But it's a nice thing to say, right? And then when they do call you, you're like, shit. Well, that's what my sponsee did. And so this is the letter she wrote. And this woman did not want to see her. This woman's in AA, too. She was, okay. She goes, I want to apologize to you for when I showed up in the relationship a couple of years ago. So it took a couple of years for this to happen. It was during a time when you were going through some serious and frightening back surgery. I was simply the producer of confusion rather than harmony. And I really let you down when I dropped by your apartment one afternoon to visit. By all accounts, I led you to believe I was someone you could count on, someone who would be there for you in times of need. During the course of our visit, I asked you what I could do to help you, and you specifically said what you needed. You needed somebody to come by, walk your dogs, perhaps a trip to the grocery store during that week. I told you that I would help you where I could. However, I never followed through with the effort. However, I never followed through with any effort at all to help you. I made a few lame inquiries via text, chicken shit, which was nothing more than a self-centered effort to manage my reputation. I wanted to be seen as a kind and helpful friend, but all I gave you were words, unwilling to back it up with any action. My behavior was thoughtless and inconsiderate. I was only thinking of myself. I know this was deeply hurtful to you, and you rightly let me know, because this chick did come at her. You told me the truth about my behavior, and you were absolutely right to do so. This apology is long overdue, and I want to tell you that I sincerely regret my actions. I take 100% responsibility for the harm I needlessly created, at a most crucial time in your life. I hope you are well, and I'm wishing you all the good things in your life. And she never responded. So my girl's free. But the truth of the matter is that's an easy trap to fall into. So you just want to be the swell guy. And this was another one of another sponsee that upset a sponsee. Have you ever done that one? Ah, that's lovely. I owe you an apology for the way I spoke to you several months ago, specifically the day that I let you know I would no longer be able to sponsor you. I addressed you in a berating manner with a downright scolding tone. This did nothing but put a wedge between us and render me totally ineffective in an exchange that might have otherwise been helpful. I came at you angry, shaming you as though I was morally superior. I've been there before. That one never serves you well. I'm sure you must have felt like a scolded child. It was not my place, and I was wrong to have talked to you that way. Driven more by my self-centered need to prove my position, I lost true perspective and hit you with a damaging, self-righteous, fueled bombardment of angry words. You did not deserve that, and I'm truly sorry that I left you with that kind of sting and ugly impression. How self-centered of me to be thinking only of me and protecting my so-called reputation. There was a possibility, an opportunity perhaps, for me to be helpful to you that day, but it was lost in my efforts to manage on the basis of my will. This I deeply regret, because what you needed most at that time I failed to give you. Perhaps I have left you with a sour perspective of the role of a sponsor, and if so, I certainly can't blame you, and I take full responsibility for leaving you with what must have been nothing short of a very bad taste in your mouth. I'm open to hear from you further in regards to how this impacted you. I have thought of you often, knowing you were facing some serious and frightening circumstances. If you would like to bring me up to date on your progress, I would welcome the opportunity to hear from you and how you are coming along presently. And she's now sponsoring her again. Isn't that special? Yeah, and you know, that's what it's all about. and the amends process just goes on and on and on. And we were talking earlier, a gal and I, that the majority of the input you'll get in AA is don't do it. You cause more harm doing it. I say the only place you cause harm is if you sleep with your girlfriend's boyfriend and you go tell your girlfriend. That's harmful, right? That's not what we do. There's some that are direct, what are you doing? But if you stole something from somebody, I think you need to go back and clean it up. You know, it's going to be an ugly feeling for you, but I think so. And you know, everyone has got a certain circumstance, but, you know, go to people that are going to tell you to make the amends, because 9 out of 10 times, it is absolutely remarkable. I went back and told the bus guy that I lied about blowing those valve stems off. You know, I mean, to me, I think, you know, somebody stole my mom, like I said, died when I was young, and I had her ring. Her wedding ring, and some idiot was fixing a doorknob in my apartment, and I think he stole it. And if he came back 30 years later and told me he stole it, it would mean a lot to me. You know what I mean? I'm never going to get that ring back. I knew I wasn't going to get that ring back, but it would mean a lot. It restores people's faith in humanity. It really does. And we're like, yeah, but, you know, people say, oh, it causes them more harm. You know, I don't know. I don't agree with that. Okay, I am going to go ahead and start the 10th step, because I believe 10 and 11 are so profound, and I do think they're a little misunderstood. I mean, I thought the 10th step was the evening review for years. Remember, I'm not reading a book. Now, don't get me wrong. I wasn't doing it anyway, okay? But at least I had the information that it was the evening review. Come to find out, the 10th step is a spot check inventory taken throughout the day, right? And now, once you find out, if you think the 10th step was the evening review, which that's not at all unusual. I mean, a lot of people do. You don't ever want to straighten people out in a meeting, you know, when they go, let's talk about the 10th step evening review, and you go, right? Because that's the most ineffective way to do it. Wait till about 4 or 5 shares and go, you know, I'm so glad we're talking about this. For the longest time, I misunderstood what the 10th step was. I, too, thought it was the evening review. But what it is, because you see, if you're going to try to wake people up, you have to grow an understanding and effectiveness, which is straight out of our 10th step. You come at people with this, and boy, you turn them off. I am telling you, Wichita, Kansas will never ask me back to speak. I mean, when I got off the podium, I'm surprised they weren't throwing their coffee cups at me, you know? And it was terrible. And Charlie goes, it didn't go very well. I was like, they hate me here. But I can't. I said, I take untreated alcoholism very personally. Oh, those were the terrible days. Okay, so this is, I'm not like that anymore, am I, Mike? So this is a reading I love. Emmett Fox is my teacher. I love me some Emmett Fox. I don't know what it is about the way that guy writes and speaks, but he just goes straight to my heart. And you have to find those spirit, you don't have to, but it's best to find those spiritual teachers that speak to you. And, you know, sometimes people read like 6, 7, 8 spiritual books in the morning, and I think you're kind of missing it. It'd be better to study a paragraph or two out of one for the whole week, so that it goes in. Instead, it goes here. You got to get it here. So it says, problems are a part of life. They are inescapably woven into the fabric of our world. We tend to go into problem-solving mode all too readily. Action as if we have the capacity to fix everything. Mm-hmm. This is a habitual response so automatic that it bypasses our conscious thinking. Not only does this habit frustrate us, it also distances us from God. Do not let fixing things be your top priority. We are ever so limited in our capacity to correct all that is wrong in the world around us. Don't weigh ourselves down with responsibilities that are not our own. Instead, make our relationship with God our primary concern. Talk with God about whatever it is on your mind and seek his perspective on the situation. And to me, that is what the 10th step's trying to get us to, right? I'm sorry, there's still more. I made it really big font. Rather than trying to fix everything that comes to our attention, ask God to show us what is truly important. Remember that we are en route to freedom, and let our problems fade into the light of the universe. The 10th step talks a lot about purpose, right? The book talks a lot about purpose. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. We are here to play the role God assigns. That's very interesting. If I am to carry a vision of God's will into all my activities, on my own power, I can't do that. I'm fake and phony. How are you? Doing good. Not so good. Okay, well, I didn't think this was going there. So what's going on? You know, circle the drain. Have you ever walked away and go, why did I ask that question? You know, but I looked like I was so compassionate and concerned. And the truth of the matter is if in fact we really do apply this, I really am sincerely concerned. I will stop my day. If this is where we're going, I'm there with you. Our primary purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. That is not optional. You must be in the sponsorship world. It's not optional. To show other alcoholics precisely how we recovered is the main purpose of this book. There's three places where purpose is discussed. This 10th step off the wall, and this is all Lorenz's stuff, the 10th step off the wall, if you take it off the wall, continue to take personal inventory and when we're wrong, promptly admit it. That is a damage control statement if you take that step off the wall. If you study the step in the big book, it is profound. Now, I'm not here to say anything about the 12 and 12, but the 12 and 12 was never designed to take the place of the big book. It is essays. It is a good piece of literature. But I kind of believe it's designed to give to your parents, your clergy, your doctor, stuff like that. Yeah, there's good stuff in there, God. If you're a 12 and 12er, don't hear me knocking it. But the big book is the one that I believe is where our directions are. There are not directions in the 12 and 12. You'd be surprised at how people try to take people through the work in the 12 and 12. It was not designed for that. So you've kind of gone off on a rogue. So if you see that step, what happens is you go through life asleep, right? You're asleep. All of a sudden, you step on somebody's toes, and they startle you awake, and you're like, oh, my God, I have pissed off Tim at the meeting so bad, and I've got to go clean it up. And then you go over there, and you clean it up, and then you fall back asleep, right? I did that for years in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I use the 10th step as damage control only. I did not understand what the point of the 10th step was. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it, right? Theory is like speculation. And it says that we've entered the world of the spirit. Mark Houston would just, you know, he would come at you like, you know, you've entered the world of the spirit. Do you believe that? So yes or no? Yeah. Oh! You're like, Scott, I remember Charlie is just blown away by him, and I'm going, he is a little over the top for me. And, oh, my God, then we get to know him, but love him, loved him with all my heart. I just miss him terribly. And he would say, how do you know what you don't know? I mean, I don't know about you guys, but the first time I ever read We've Entered the World of the Spirit, I thought, well, that's pretty heady. I mean, what does that even mean? You know? And then but if you looked at me, I'd go, wow. And today, this is what I think it means. Once again, it's all weaved through where I am today. I used to love to gossip, and I don't like it anymore. It no longer serves me. It doesn't feel good. A little girl and I, when we were about 3 years sober, we gossiped about everybody in AA, everybody. And we just sit down and gossip. And then one day I said, you know, we really shouldn't do this. And she goes, okay, let's not do it. And I mean, we sat there in silence. It's like, oh my God, we have nothing to talk about if we're not talking trash about the people in AA, you know, and it was unbelievable. Well, these things no longer serve me. I don't like the feeling of gossiping. I don't like the feeling of lying, and I've entered this world of the spirit where this no longer serves me. So it can be anything in your world, right? Our next function, which means expected duty, is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. When I first got on fire after 17 years of sobriety, I was way too in your face. Oh, my God, my sponsees, I gave you clear-cut directions what to do. You're not doing it. And they were all pissing me off, right? I was mad, and I remember I called Bob D. in Vegas, and I said, oh, my God, Bob, I'm miserable. I am miserable. My sponsees aren't doing what I want them to do, And he said, and this is Bob, he goes, well, you know, say the prayer of growing understanding and effectiveness. And I thought, well, once again, I grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous where somebody gives you direction, you take it, period. You don't not take it. That's what I grew up with. I hope we keep that going. And so that night I did a lame prayer, you know, really lame. Oh, God, help me grow in understanding and effectiveness. And I swear to God, the next day, it's the only defect of character that was almost removed immediately. The next day, I'm talking to a sponsee with so much compassion, I can't believe it. It's still not lost on me, and I bet I did that 16 years ago. And I mean, I come at people with either what I've done and how that's affected me. I mean, it's unbelievable. And I really believe that God was saying, Katie, you're going to be helping a lot of people. And if you keep on with this, you know, dead in your face, kind of poking on your chest thing, you're not going to be effective, and you're not going to be able to help these people. I really believe that. Of course, I think he's up there talking to Joe and talking to my mom and my dad. We're having a little powwow. What are we going to do with Katie down there? She's losing her shit, you know. But I get to have a childlike image of what that looks like. You know what I mean? It says to continue to watch for four things. Selfish, dishonest, resentment, and fear. I'm to watch for these things, not wait for them to show up. So I'm to watch my thinking, right? And this is that I want everybody to do as I wish, right? The selfishness. The dishonesty is always the three forms of it. And when these crop up, listen to the urgency of what the 10th step is. We ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately, so now it's at once and immediately. We make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. There's the quickness. And then we resolutely turn our thoughts, not our actions, to someone we could help. And the purpose of doing this is that you do that spot check inventory. You don't wait to the evening to do it. That's the 11th step evening review. You are to do this immediately. Why? So it doesn't dig in. Once a resentment or a fear digs in, Emmett Fox talks about that. It's hard, hard, hard to work it out. But if you get it right away, you would be surprised. So if it says we ask God at once to remove it, I call that affirmative prayer. This is the way I do it. So I always say, whenever I see something going on, I tap the brakes because I'm watching my thinking. And typically, I see something. If I'm not careful, then I'm driven, and all of a sudden, I start reacting. Everything starts going to hell in a handbasket. And so when I see something that bothers me, I tap the brakes by saying, God, I'm not willing to believe that delusional lie. That's my way of stopping what's going on in my head. Right, that's the bondage of self, the rattle in the head. And I say, I'm not willing to believe that delusional lie. And then I affirm something positive for that circumstance. It's not at all what's happening, but I affirm the positive, because the law states, and the laws are the law of subconscious activity, the law of substitution, law of forgiveness, the great law. These laws are all in effect, just like the law of gravity is. You wouldn't jump off a building and hope it be suspended and that you'd be hanging in the air, right? The law of electricity, you don't stick a fork in a plug. You know, I mean, we respect these laws, but I never gave the laws any sort of anything. I didn't even know about them. Mark was the one who woke me up to them. So say you're upset with your sister because you and your sister just seem to have a rub that you don't get along. And so I just hang up the phone. Oh, God, she wears me out. Now, my sister doesn't. I'm crazy in love with my sister, but let's just assume that. So you hang up the phone and you're upset with your sister and you go, God, you know, I'm not willing to believe the delusional lie. My sister and I have an amazing relationship. We watch funny programs and we just laugh all the time. Every time we talk to each other, it's a great life. And that 3 to 10 second redirect, that's it, just a 3 to 10 second redirect. You might get 10 minutes of relief, you might get 2 hours of relief, but you're watching for it to come back. And it usually starts like this. Oh, my sister. God, she is, Charlie, like I say, she'd give a woodpecker a headache, man. And you know what I mean? And then the next thing you know, you're 5 minutes in the conversation in your head. That's what we're watching for. And the law of substitution, this is the law. I'm going to go for about 5 more minutes. There are a few great laws that govern all things, just as there are a few fundamental laws in chemistry. We know that thought control is the key of destiny. Do you? Because let me tell you, your thinking goes rogue if you're not careful. And in order to learn thought control, we have to know and understand these laws. One of the great mental laws is the law of substitution. This means that the only way to get rid of a certain thought is to substitute another one for it. You cannot dismiss a thought directly. Did you know that? You just can't. Now, in the material world, if I move my phone over there, I don't have to put something in its place. But in the spiritual world, you cannot. You have to replace it with something. Preferably think of God. Do not fight them, but think of something positive. Preferably think of God. But if that's too difficult, because it is sometimes, at the moment, turn your attention to something quite different. The law of subconscious activity is the doozy. This one will just take your breath away. As soon as the subconscious mind accepts any idea, so when it says selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our trouble, we're driven by 100 forms of fear, this is where the law of subconscious activity comes in. And it says, as soon as the subconscious mind accepts any idea, it immediately begins trying to put it into effect. It uses all the resources, and these are far greater than common supposed. It uses every bit of knowledge that you ever collected, most of which you have totally forgotten, to bring about its purpose. Is that making your butt pucker? Come on. I mean, this is scary stuff. It mobilizes the many mental powers that you possess, most of which you've never consciously used. What? It draws on the unlimited energy of the racing mind. Have you ever seen, oh my God, I'm not going to get that check. If I don't get the check, then I can't pay this bill. And then if I don't pay this bill, blah, 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 blah. Right down the tube. It lines up all the laws of nature as they operate both inside and outside of you. I swear, I almost need like an orchestra behind me. To get its way. Sometimes it succeeds in its purpose immediately. Sometimes it takes a little time. Sometimes it takes a long time. But if this is not utterly impossible, the subconscious will bring it about once it accepts the idea. This law is true both for good and bad. Here's the promise. This law, which uses negativity, brings sickness, trouble, and failure, and when used positively, brings healing, freedom, and success. It's unbelievable, guys. At the very end of this whole deal, I'll read the positive prayers people have sent me because they used it. It feels stupid. Mark Houston was the one who turned me on to it. I had a big, huge problem in my business. And Charlie goes, why don't you go ask Mark? And I'm like, I don't want to ask Mark. I got people. And he goes, go ask Mark. And I'm like, okay, fine. I get in my car, drive 45 minutes to Mark's place, and Mark comes out of a business meeting. That was not lost on me. See, that's what we do. We stop what we're doing to help you. You need help? I'm here. It's unbelievable. And he comes out, and Mark could smoke a cigarette like nobody I've ever seen. And, I mean, he was like the Gary Brown, the Marlboro man, you know, it's like, whoo! But he would pull a coal on that cigarette like crazy. And I laid out my whole problem, man. You know, I owned a franchise, but it was in jeopardy because I was dishonest. Now, we weren't there yet, but I'm telling him the whole storyline. And he pulls that coal on that cigarette, and he goes, you know what? He goes, this particular woman was an old friend of yours, wasn't she? But now she's my manager, whatever they are in a franchise. I said, yeah, she could take my franchise away. I've had it for 26 years. And he goes, you know what? I want you to do a positive prayer for 3 minutes in the morning and 3 minutes at night. 3 minutes is a long time about her and y'all's relationship. And then it was 15-minute conversation, and it was over. And I'm driving in thinking, that was the stupidest stuff I have ever heard. Oh, my God. Really? That's the best Mark Houston could do? And but once again, I'm taught that you do whatever anybody tells you, period. That's what you got to do. And I did it, and I am telling you it was remarkable. First time it felt stupid that morning, felt really stupid that night, and the next morning it started feeling okay. And then it started feeling okay, and then it started feeling okay, and then the next thing I knew, I start doing it with my kids, and then next thing, I mean, I'm 15, 20 minutes in the morning doing it. Anybody I know, I'm putting it in affirmative prayer. Stuff that you wouldn't even believe would happen about relationships, about what we're going to do. It's not praying for the other person. Don't misunderstand that. This is affirming our relationship. And sure enough, when that woman was supposed to come to my business and I was doing some things against the policy of the franchise, she could shut me down. And instead, she sent somebody else. And they didn't overlook what I was doing, but they were much gentler to me about what I was doing. And I said to him, I said, what are you doing here? Because it was always a surprise attack. And they go, it was the weirdest thing. So-and-so called me and told me to show up. I was like, wow. And that tool is one of the shiniest tools in my toolkit today, is affirmative prayer. And I will go into some of the storylines because, trust me, I can help you understand it more if you bring me your circumstance and I'll tell you what to do. It's going to sound corny. It's going to sound ridiculous. It's incredibly effective. Okay, I got to hand it over to Mike and I'll finish 10 Step tomorrow.
Thanks, Katie. That was a great presentation. 10-step. It's a key part of my sobriety, and it was a key part of the home group that I was brought into. My home group, or till I moved to Louisville, and we're working on making it happen there now, my home group used the 10th step is a 12-step tool. Anybody coming to our group would be made part of a 10-step circle, usually four or five people. And there'd be an old-timer, there'd be some middle-of-the-road sobriety there, and then there'd be new people. And so the way this worked, and it reeled me right in, you know, to go there, it's a great big book kind of meeting, Gary Brown and all that stuff, and they talk about all this stuff, and I go, and then a bunch of us met for dinner before a meeting, and as we broke up and were heading off to go to the meeting, Gary said, Mike, you got a second? And I said, okay, yeah. And he says, well, I need you to know that I was dishonest at work today. And he went on and explained that, and what he, of course, had asked God to take care of it and then remove it. But the point was, the oldest guy in the group had the humility to actually do that with the newest guy in the group. It's not we're the deacons and you're the newcomers and you might someday become one of us if you follow the rules. And so it's one thing to talk about, beat my chest about this is a real shit. It's another thing for me to practice it. And it's really excellent for the old guy because it helps keep egos in check. Quick example, the last time gas was, you know, $4 and better a gallon, I pulled into my local Costco in Indy, and I'm filling my car up, and you know, they got these pump attendants that roam around, and he just kind of walked by and said, "Mister, please don't top off." And I said, "Look, you son of a bitch, when you start putting your credit card into this pump, you can tell me how to pump the gas. Till then, up till then, I'll do it any goddamn way I want to." Got me? Now, I haven't even finished this before I know I'm, you know, way off the out of line. So if I, you know, they switch these guys up, I won't find him tomorrow or anything. So I got to make amends to him right away. And I went up and said, "Look, I'm just scared about where these prices are going. And I had no right to take my fear out on you. And thank you for being here to keep the pumps open and so we could, you know, save the 40 cents over every place else in town." And he goes, "Yeah, it's cool." So as I'm driving away, I'm on my phone with the newest sponsor. "You won't believe your sponsor is just a jackass." And I lay it out to him, and then eventually it'll work its way to my sponsor here. But that's way, I look at it as part of God's recycling plan. I go out in the world and I didn't start out with any bad intentions that day, but in the process of me doing the best I can do, I produce a bunch of garbage. Now, if I'm willing to take that garbage and put it in the recycling plan, you know, ask God for help to maintain that relationship. Call the new guy and say, you know, so he knows he's in an egalitarian organization, that we don't have lords of the up here and all this other kind of stuff. And particularly the piece about turning our thoughts to people we can help. Now, we usually actually do something. Because God's kind of tired about hearing about Mike's good intentions. It's kind of like we had a local attorney in town that claimed he made amends to a guy by writing a $13,000 check and putting it in his coffin. So, yeah. My intentions are not really important here. Hey, how about we stop by the Progress House on our way to the meeting tonight? Maybe we can find somebody there we can give a ride to or just have a chat with, you know? And it helps keep everybody on the firing line and keeps egos in check and that sort of thing here. When I deal with people that are enamored of this is, you know, something we do it before we go to bed at night, I will say, "Well, let me pose a situation for you. I'm out walking my dog in your neighborhood, and my dog takes a big dump in your front yard. And I say to you, 'Well, sir, I realize my dog just took a dump in your yard, but fortunately, I belong to a spiritual program. And tonight, before I go to bed, I'm going to decide whether it was okay for my dog to take a dump in your lawn. And if I decide that that was inappropriate, I'll come back tomorrow and pick it up.'" We usually don't have to go further with that discussion. See, usually the thing, principle is simple. Delay magnifies the pain and the damage. I made amends along to a couple people, and the only comment they had is, why did you wait so long? Why did you wait so long?
Well, I was spiritually growing, and I was,
you know, the world doesn't give a shit. We think the world is part of my development structure here. See, it's taking selfishness and self-centeredness and just repurposing it with a new sales pitch. It's like rebranding the Edsel or something like that. Oh, nobody's old enough to know what an Edsel was, but it was a disaster of a car. But so that's what we do here, and it's important. It's got all kinds of possibilities, and you know, doesn't mean I don't do an evening review, but the evening review is kind of like the 30,000 foot or the Google Earth view of Lorenz today. If you were watching Lorenz from 30,000 feet, what did his day look like? Is here and here and here and all this kind of stuff. And was there anything I missed? So 10 step for me, it's my spiritual antivirus here. And you don't just switch your antivirus on when you think you might have a problem. It's always running in the background. In fact, they taught me a little thing, a mantra to keep me going with that. It says, watch, watch, watch. What am I thinking? What am I feeling? What am I about to do? Think, think, think. What am I about to do? I learned to do things like when I was calling on clients to sit 2 or 3 minutes in my car and do a little quiet 2 or 3 minute meditation. And who am I taking in to see this client? Am I taking, I'm pissed off at my partner in to see the client? Am I taking, I'm afraid about the note I got from the IRS in to see my client? All that kind of thing. It cleans it up. I also, people are very grateful that I normally will sit in my car quietly for at least 3 to 5 minutes before I walk into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. The AA meeting is not a place where I dump my crap. I deserve to bring my best game in there. That meeting is not about me. It's where we come together and wounded and people that have been harmed, we try and reach out. And we're doing frontline triage for them. We're trying to, the ones that come in there bleeding, figuratively or literally, we're trying to, the old thing I picked up from my days in the military, what you do, first thing you do is stop the bleeding, clear the airway, treat the wound, you know? And that's what I have to do. I have to go in consciously. And God will give me that gift if I look at it. And it's really effective. I told you about my fiance dying. We did not have any AA meetings about my dead fiance. Not necessary. That's what a sponsor is for. That's what my road dogs are for. I hope you all got road dogs, you know. People that we can trust and we're not in a sponsorship relationship, but we've got spiritual consent and gut level honesty with each other. These are the tools that make us effective. So I want to hear what Charles Vernon Parker has to say tonight.